Lady Ballers. So this week I'm on with Janet. Now, Janet came along to a Lady Balls event, and I think, Janet, your testimonial is still my favorite testimony of all time. I absolutely loved it, and I loved the way you helped people, the way you played such a big part in that retreat, and everybody just loved you. So thanks for coming on to the show.
Well, a big thank you for having me. I feel honored.
I had to have you on after, having met you on the phone, not even in real life, only, a week before you came along to a retreat?
Yes, it was rather an impulsive decision on my behalf. Yes. One minute I was talking to you and the next thing I was on a plane.
To Bali. Where were we? Gold Coast.
Gold Coast, yeah. From Bali. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, what I'd love for the Lady Ballers to hear today is I want them to hear your story of the times in your life where you've embraced your Lady Balls. And that can be what you're doing now. I really hope you share the story of launching what you're doing now, because obviously I met you just as you were launching all of that, so that was exciting. But any time in your life where you feel like, you know, you've come through some sort of adversity or some sort of moment that might have seemed hard, yet you pushed through the fear, through the blocks anyway, and you embraced your Lady Balls. So when do you think in your life would be the biggest time that you've had to really embrace those Lady Balls?
I think I probably need to put a little bit of context around this. Definitely the session that I had with you at that retreat was a game changer, because in front of a group of people, you said to me, okay, you know, like you were just saying, oh, Janet, when's your birthday? You said, oh, what's your most negative belief about yourself? And I went, oh, shit. And it hit me all of a sudden. It was like, I am nothing. And as I said that, I thought, wow, you couldn't get much more, you know, nihilistic than that, right? And there was something about the power of firstly identifying it, secondly saying it out loud, and then thirdly saying it to a bunch of witnesses. And I think what was really important in that moment was that everyone looked at me like I was mad. And I looked at them and went, no, hang on a sec, don't you realize this? If you think of an egg and a shell, imagine there's no yolk inside. That's how I felt all my life. And everyone was just so effusive in their putting down of that stupid script that had been rattling around in my head for the last 50 years, that I think that gave me this huge shot of confidence. And that's really what propelled me to not just talk about the Fifth Door program, but actually put it out there and make that leap.
I remember that moment, because you came in with the idea. You already kind of knew what you wanted to do. And more context, you had many successful businesses before. But maybe do you want to share kind of where you were at before that point, leading up to that? Because you wanted to make a change and you felt, is the right word, kind of just burnt out in what you were doing maybe? Do you want to just put some context behind that, where you were at before you
went? Yeah, I probably have to go right back. Back to when I was very young, and I think this is where trauma starts for most of us. And my dad was a doctor, actually. He was an ear surgeon. And he used to come home every night and say, oh, they got their pound of flesh today. And so from a very early age, I probably would have been 2 or 3, I got the message that work was all about noble sacrifice, you know, that you weren't supposed to actually enjoy your work. It was almost like you had to suffer your way to success. That's what I got from that. And then a year or two later, I was a very cherished only child at that point. And then my younger sister arrived, and that really was, I think probably a lot of older, you know, firstborns go through this same experience, that suddenly the parents who were so doting and loving and one-eyed about you turn all their attention to this, you know, crying baby who doesn't really seem to have much going for them at all. And so the conclusion I leapt to at that point was, wow, I better do something. I better pull a pretty special rabbit out of the hat to win back their love and attention. And so that's where I really set myself on the path of being this, achiever who set I guess, impossibly high standards for herself. And then it was interesting because my teacher in sixth grade said to my mum one day, oh, I'm not supposed to share these reports, but Janet got an A after her name. And mum thought, oh, that's nice, she's an A grade student. And the teacher said, no, actually, it's A for anxiety. And I think I repeated this pattern throughout my life. You know, in my adult life, I married someone who was equally driven, and together we ran restaurants. We ran an advertising agency in Sydney. We did multi-million-dollar land development. Looking back, I realized we'd bought, renovated, sold 117 properties. You know, and in between all of that, I found time to raise three daughters. So I had the achievement bug really badly. And it was all about, particularly in the 80s, you know, which is known as the greed is good era, it was all about work really hard, make lots of money, and once you've made lots of money, then you'll be happy. So happiness was kind of like the light at the end of this very, very long, dark tunnel. Yeah. But I was very fortunate because I did actually have this time when I actually had everything I thought I wanted. So we had this fabulous waterfront mansion in the Whitsundays in Australia, which is up in the North Queensland. And I had my three gorgeous daughters and a happy marriage, and we had lots of money in the bank. So I had all these things that we'd spent the last 30 years working so hard for. And I'll never forget the day when I was sitting in a kayak with my daughter Clover, who was eight at the time, and looking at our house, which was right on the water there on this glassy bay, and there were turtles bobbing up and down in the bay and palms swaying in the breeze, and there was private beach next door. You know, it doesn't get much more idyllic than that. And I was overcome by this total sense of emptiness. And I went, oh. So I've traveled all the way down this long, dark tunnel expecting to see the light of freedom and happiness and joy, and I'm out of the tunnel now and it's darker than the tunnel. Where do I go from here?
I don't want to break the flow of your story, but I've got two questions. First of all, what you experienced as a child, was that conscious in your mind when you brought up your own kids?
Yes. Yeah.
And so did you kind of have a, maybe not so much a fear or anxiety, but just so conscious that your kids didn't have those same sort of feelings?
Yes, but I've kind of developed a theory on that. It's interesting because I think it's very common, isn't it, for us as parents to go, I'm not going to do what my parents did. And my parents didn't do anything wrong, incidentally, and they were very, very loving.
Yeah, it's normal for us to form beliefs. Whether there's trauma or no trauma, we just do.
Yeah.
Natural.
Well, I think it's a human condition to have trauma. It's a bit like those grass trees. In order to propagate, they have to go through a bushfire first, right?
Right.
And so we all have to go through our own particular bushfire. It's just that we don't always recognize it as that at the time. We don't see it as something good. In fact, if we allow ourselves, we'll stay in that victim mode for the rest of our lives. But, I definitely said to myself, I'm not going to put any academic pressure on my kids. But the thing is, it's kind of, I do believe it's kind of in our genes anyway. I don't think it's just nurture. I think there's a bit of nature in all of this, and we can inherit traits from our parents.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how our parents raise us. It's kind of partly who we are anyway. And the challenge for us is to go, okay, well, what am I going to do with this? Am I going to continue to make my life a misery, or am I actually going to develop some self-awareness so I can actually see the gift in this? Because there actually is a very powerful upside to this if you can reframe it and change your approach to it.
My daughter actually said to me last night, do you believe in past lives? And I said, sometimes when people, you know, when I've met people who do past life regression work, that kind of thing, sometimes there's some beliefs and some thoughts and feelings you have in your life that don't feel like they're yours, and you think, where did this even come from? Like, it's not congruent with anything I really feel like I'm feeling or thinking. And so whether it's past lives or DNA just passed on from our parents, or things we've seen our parents experience or repeat that we've seen and subconsciously taken on anyway, either way, some of it seeps through.
absolutely. No, I definitely, I process a lot of people now, and just the last couple I've worked with, definitely there was this thing of, it doesn't, you know, like when you're working with someone, it's almost like you're a detective, you're looking for clues, and the clues didn't add up. And one of them was a Black American guy, and he said, he dropped in the conversation a couple of times, "Oh, I'm nobody's slave." And I said, "You know, you seem to have this fear of being owned." And he went, "Yeah, absolutely, you're right." And of course, this must have come from previous generations. Mm-hmm. And so how that translated into his current life was that he had a fear of commitment, because he saw that as someone having control over him.
Got it.
So that's like a fear that you'd have to say goes back generationally.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's kind of still a relevant fear, because we can all be trapped by our own minds, can't we? We can all be enslaved by ourselves. So I think his message is highly relevant, even though it's kind of a cultural one.
Right.
And then another person I was working with had this thing about being Catholic, and her core negative belief was, "I'm sinful," but Catholicism hadn't played any role in her life at all, and it really was destroying her. How she was experiencing her current, this life now. And she just happened to drop into the conversation. "You know, when I was 3 years old, I had these visions of this girl in chains in a dungeon, and it must have been like in the Middle Ages or something, and she was some kind of sex slave. And even though I didn't know about sex at the age of three, I felt the oppression that she was suffering." And we realized that however it worked, and I don't know how it works exactly, but it was definitely affecting how she felt about herself now. And just by making her aware of that, she was able to take the sting out of it, disempower it, and move on with her life. But it helped her make sense of what was going on. But yeah, definitely I believe in that.
Yeah, 100%.
Some
things are not, just, you can't explain it. And then other times those beliefs are so in our subconscious mind that we don't actually want to admit them. We don't think they're true, but actually we did put them there ourselves. Sometimes we're just in denial that they're there.
Yeah.
I think also with our kids, I feel like it's kind of like, I always say this when people are talking about politics, you know, if somebody makes a change, it's like you pull a string in one place, it's going to have an effect at the other end somewhere. And it's like with kids, like if we grow up forming these beliefs and we try so hard not to pass those beliefs onto our kids without realizing it, we're probably causing, you know, cause and effect, causing someone of an opposite belief. I just had a call with somebody today. It was really interesting. And her belief that she had been stuck with was, "I can't do this on my own. I can't be successful on my own." And we were laughing because my belief that I've always had that I have to work on constantly is, I can only be successful if I'm on my own. I'm the only one I can trust and rely on.
Yeah, it's a trust issue. Yeah.
We both had blocks that we were working on constantly, but they were complete opposites of each other based on what we had hammered into our minds throughout our lives. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I have a theory on that, but if you can isolate, as you helped me do, isolate that core, what I call the taproot, you know, the mother of negative beliefs, because we've got lots of them, right? There's not just one, but they tend to come off a main one. And you helped me isolate the one that I was nothing. And that came from the fact that if I wasn't working, I didn't feel I was anyone, you know? So I was literally the embodiment of a human doing, not a human being. And that's what caused me all my suffering. And so in a way, if you can take that core negative belief and go, well, that's been the source of my suffering. And so it's come about for a reason. And I know it's a story, right? Because we invented it usually when we were very young to protect ourselves, to kind of cocoon ourselves and contain the emotion attached to it, whether it's shame or humiliation or whatever it is, you know, lack of self-worth, some very, very toxic emotion. So if we can wrap it up in a nice, neat, negative belief about ourselves, and the more negative it is, the more reassuring it is in a funny way, because it future proofs us, because next time someone rejects us or makes us feel terrible, we go, oh well, that makes sense, because I'm nothing, or you know, I can only do it on my own. So it kind of, in a funny way, it makes us feel better about ourselves in a very unhealthy way, particularly if we carry it through to adult life. But I believe if we can understand that actually not only is it not true, but the opposite is true.
That's right.
You know, so in my case, if I go, okay, well, what's the opposite of I am nothing? Well, actually, I realize that not only am I not nothing, but I've got a gift, just like all of us do. And in a funny way, I am the gift, just like you are the gift. And the people you work with, all of us have a gift, and it's our job to put it out there and share it. Now, I would not have been so passionate about spreading that message if I hadn't experienced the suffering of believing I was nothing. And that's how I, that's where I realized there's actually great strength in these stories that we tell ourselves, that they're there for a reason to create the passion that we need to drive us forward and ultimately
magnify our power.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, yeah. You know, no light without dark. A box is neither big nor small until compared to another box. Like, what is big or small? What is light or dark without the contrast? And what I loved was, and this was, it was such a breakthrough moment for everybody in the room at the Lady Bulls retreat, was because when you said, I am nothing, and everybody looked at you like, are you crazy? Because we had all in our heads, like I had a list in my head of, from the very moment you walked in the door, that gift that you're talking about, you were that in every moment and every step of the way through the retreat for people that you didn't even know the you know, in the first few minutes when you came in the door and we were having wine and cheese. And I think you were keto at the time. So when you were standing around talking to everybody, yeah, you were in your gift and everybody saw that. So when you said, I am nothing, everyone was like, what? You what? Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a big wake up. And I think that moment helped other people realize that the shit they'd been telling themselves forever was untrue. It was like a really magnified moment for them.
That's right. Yeah, it's a form of delusion. It's like a weird kind of,
yeah. Are you crazy?
Yeah, that's right. We talked about that toxic fog thing there that we surround ourselves in, and it stops us having any kind of clarity. And I think what drives me forward is I hate seeing people suffer when I realize they don't have to. And it's so simple really to kind of push through. I mean, obviously there's practice involved in this. You can't just kind of go, oh my goodness, this isn't true. You then have to start acting as if it's not true, you know, so it's all about changing behavior. But
solidify.
But yeah.
But it's a muscle. Do you agree it's a muscle that you've got to constantly work on?
Yeah, I think the breakthrough moment for me and was to actually finally get out of my own way, because it's ego, right? When you say, even though it sounds very unegoic to say I'm nothing, actually it's the ego trying to keep you safe. So when I could finally get out of my own way and start putting my energy into helping others, then it became a no-brainer. Then it was like, oh yes, this is much more fun, you know, getting out of my own mental mind trap.
Which brings me on to a question I wanted to ask when you were talking just before. So as a person who's always been driven, so you and your husband always driven, you're always action takers, yet on the other side, your realization was, I think you just used the words that you're a human doing, not human being, right? So I had a conversation today with someone and we were talking about beliefs and we got through it, and I felt like we had spent so much time and energy focusing on the beliefs that we need to shift, that sometimes you get to a point. And I've always said for years, my favorite quote is, action removes doubt. I don't even know if I got it from somewhere, I made it up, I still don't know. I can't find anyone to quote. I thought, maybe I did come up with it.
Own it. So, yeah. Take it, it's yours, Jody.
And so what it made me think was, we're going through this belief shifting with her, and I thought, man, this belief that she thinks is true is so far from the truth. I know she believes in her conscious mind how far from the truth it is, but there's a lot of work to do, not necessarily a lot, to kind of drown it out of her subconscious, delete it, remove it, however you want to word it. And by the end of it, I was like, you know what? We've just put so much time and energy and focus on this belief that I feel like we're magnifying it. What if instead, for every hour we spent, or even minute we spent, magnifying the beliefs that we need to shift, we use that time to take action on the things that will move us forward towards our goal? Because when we're in action, inspired action, not painful action. Our brain is so consumed with happiness and joy that we're doing what is our purpose, what is it is that lights us up, that there's no room in your brain to think of those, I'm not loved, I'm not enough, I am nothing, because you're getting shut down.
I think there's a step in that, rather than just diving into action, it's acknowledging, or it's firstly, it's identifying what the that belief is. What was this person's, can you share that, what her belief was about herself, just as an example?
I can't be successful on my own.
So if you say, okay, so this has caused the greatest suffering, so I've invested a lot of, there's a lot of pain invested in this, right? It is like an investment. Rather than just walk away from it and ignore it, what if I use that pain to propel myself forward? So I'm going to take the opposite of that. So what would the opposite of that belief be? I can be successful.
Which is exactly what we did on this. I've literally got the notes in front. Because this is what we did at the retreat as well. So we went through and we did, what is the statement you believe to be true? The list of times in her life proving that belief to be untrue was ridiculous. In fact, there was none proving it to be true.
So the
flip side of that was, I am successful on my own.
I am successful on my own,
and she was.
Yeah, and to fully cement that, let's call it a gift, right? It's an aspect of us, and we are the gift. So this is because this is part of us. We don't want to try and unwire this belief, because it is a part of who we are, right? And it's probably in our DNA to an extent. So it is to actually, like any gift, to receive it. And then the second part of that is to pass it on to someone else. So it's not only a statement that she's making about herself, but now she's putting it in the second person to someone and saying, and you can be successful on your own. And if she's in, so I'm not sure what her field of work is, but that's basically probably the most passionate, the thing that she can feel most passionate about, the message she can feel most passionate about giving to others. And I believe it's when you give that message to others, just like I do when I say, you know, the gift is you, every time I do that, I'm healing. The scar is getting more and more faint. So that's why, and that's kind of how it works. It's the universal law of giving.
There is nothing more beautiful, and this happens every time. If there's something I need to work through and I'm struggling to work through it on my own, someone, I will be presented with a client who is coming to me with the same problem, so that I get to coach them through it, which me through it.
Yes.
Every time. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Saying that about this lady. So what she does is she works with a woman in their 40s and 50s. She is 50 something, and Les Mills, she's on the Les Mills stages. She's like, works with people through their hormones and body changes to what seems like they come in with for weight loss, but she covers mindset, shifting beliefs and things like that for other people, so that they get their hormones in check, line all of that stuff up. And she also, you know, she helps people in that way. So she's definitely helping people in make big changes in their lives and have breakthroughs, but in a different arena, yet using the same tools.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, people say ultimately you want to be of service. And I think anyone who hears that for the first time might recoil a bit and go, oh yeah, but I'm not an altruist. And it's not altruism at all. It's actually, it's kind of like noble selfishness, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, where in being of service to others, you're ultimately being in service to yourself, so long as it's not in a spirit of self-sacrifice. I don't mean that. It's in doing what you're supposed to be doing, you know, taking that message that is a part of you that has caused so much suffering, and turning it around. So actually, not only do you heal, but you're helping others. And because you've felt it so intensely, you speak with great authority, you know, with way more authority than, having a bunch of letters after your name.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
This comes from pure life experience.
So back to your story, you were saying you, we went full circle there, but that was such great stuff. So when you were you came to that conclusion, you had the beautiful house and you're looking back on it in the water and you felt like you weren't enough. And you said that, you know, from there you talked about the tunnel. That's where we got up to.
Yeah.
So what was after that?
I was pretty much immobilized at that point. I didn't really know what to do. I kind of tried to shrug it off, you know, as we do, the old sweeping under the carpet. And I think, you know, because I didn't take action, basically the universe did. And the following year it delivered the global financial crisis. And we were very, very exposed to that. We had a huge margin loan and I didn't sell when we were supposed to and all of that. And so over the space of the next 12 months, I watched as just about everything we'd worked so hard for up to that point virtually disappeared. Not everything, but just about everything. But it was because my sense of self-worth was tied up in my financial net worth, I took it hugely personally. And it was like I was seeing a part of every time, you know, there was a point where we were losing $100,000 a day. And it was as if I was just watching bits of myself disappear, you know, like a finger being chopped off one by one until pretty much there was nothing of me left. And probably my ground zero point was when I heard about that German industrialist. I think he was a fellow who owned Volkswagen, actually. He'd lost his fortune, and so he dealt with his loss by throwing himself in front of a train. And I remember at the time not feeling any compassion or anything like that, actually, just obsessed by this thought, oh, if only that had been me. And so at that point, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like death is inevitable. Either you can take your own life and to end the suffering, but all you're doing at that point is passing all your suffering onto those you leave behind.
Yeah.
Or you experience another form of death. And it's I guess it's what you would call a spiritual death, where something inside you, something very, very fundamental has to shift. And I think that's when I realized, okay, I don't know it all. I can't do it all on my own. I do need help. So it was like a surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And
a really vulnerable place and terrifying for a lot of us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I was, you know, I prided myself on being this high-achieving, very capable person, and I spent the next 6 months in my office with post-traumatic stress disorder, not able to respond to an email. In fact, my daughter, we had to suddenly monetize our property, so we decided to open a wedding business. And my daughter, who was a beautiful, beautiful person, she came up with her partner and they ran the business for us, and she knew I was in a state, and she said to me, "Mum," she would spoon feed me jobs, right? And she said, "Look, can you just choose the color of the brochure cover? Do you want blue or green?" And I remember spending a day agonizing over this, not able to choose which would be the better color, and catastrophizing each outcome. And so that was, at that point I went, oh my goodness, you know, everything that I've believed to this point has been proven to be false. This is not where happiness lies. What's going on?
And it's crazy, like for the people listening, I've definitely gone through, I think maybe 2 years ago, maybe I think before I was doing the Lady Bulls retreats, I realized how much of my identity was attached to my business. Like without that, who am I? And I think for me, it was meeting Owen, because people had always been so impressed by what I had done in my business, my achievements, you know, how I looked in terms of confidence and being not afraid to put myself out there. And people saw that. But when I met Owen, he didn't care about any of that stuff.
Mm.
And I attached that to, well, how could you possibly love me? Like, why are you with me then? And it took a long time for me to wiggle in and realize, wait a second, this suddenly, it was like pulling my skin off. And it meant, so wait, he's saying that I am me and my business is a separate identity and he loves me for me. And I couldn't comprehend it. I was so confused. I remember spending months going, wait, what? And yeah, it was really hard. So I wonder how many people, you know, listening to this podcast are thinking, yeah, who am I without my business and without my accolades and success and all of that kind of thing? So if they're in a business that they, where it's all based on that, instead of serving in an area that brings you joy as well, it's such a different conversation.
Yeah, I think, look, the whole issue of identity is huge, particularly now, because you look at the state, you know, I guess every generation thinks that they're living on the precipice and the world's about to end. I think that's very common. However, I think the planet is in really bad shape, and you have to go, you know, where is this endless desire or addiction to consumerism coming from, you know? And that feeling of emptiness that I experienced, I think multiply that by, you know, most of the people on the planet, particularly in the Western world, we're trying to fill this void externally, you know, from material possessions, you know, going shopping, having a nice house, bigger car and all of that. And it, clearly it's not working. And I think the problem is that we've lost the sense of who we really are, our true self. You know, the healing has to be done from the inside out. It can't be done from the outside in.
So it's more about, instead of adding on new, it's getting back to your core of who you are.
Yeah. And I know I subconsciously was terrified of that, because even though I wasn't actually aware of this negative belief, but it became obvious in hindsight. But my fear, I realized, was that I don't want to peel away any layers, because what if there's nothing there? What if it's just a void? What if that emptiness is actually me? And so I did everything I could to distract myself from going to that place. And that's why the universe kept slapping me around until I had no choice but to confront it.
Got it. So after you created the wedding business, and you know, I know your wedding business was successful, because are you still running the wedding business? I know that you
moved
away when you came to the retreat, but what happened after that?
Well, fast forward about 7 or 8 years, and we sold our mansion by the sea. Which, like, in the same way you were identifying with your work, I was identifying with our real estate. You know, like, this is, oh, aren't I big and important? I've got this amazing portfolio of real estate. And so we sold that. And in the end, we sold it for way, way less than we could have sold it for years earlier. But I felt way more solid now. It didn't affect me personally. There was no trauma or anything in that. So we sold both our businesses, our wedding business in Bali and Australia, and now I'm just doing this work full time. And the funny thing is, I've kind of got this belief that if you're a bit of a zealot when it comes to work, if you've always been that way, I think it's very unrealistic to expect you're going to suddenly change and just bliss out and lie on the beach and go, all I'm seeing is rainbows. Yeah. So I don't think that's what happens. I think if anything, I'm working just as much as I was before, but now the work energizes me. So I don't even think, in fact, work is the wrong word for it. It's just what I do. It's like, you know, your occupation becomes your preoccupation. It's like I'm standing in the shower. It's what I'm thinking about, you know, what about this as a new processing technique? So it's kind of like what I would call a healthy obsession, because it's what I'm actually choosing to do. So that.
But you're doing it from a place of not, I must grow this business, I must win these awards, I must.
Oh, yeah, none of that.
It's from a place of I'm here for a purpose in this world, and I'm fulfilling it, and I'm helping people in the greater good.
Exactly. And also to realize, I'm very, very aware of where I'm not strong, which is, and I'm not being falsely modest, but it's probably in about 85% of the tasks I could potentially do. And this is a mistake I made before. And you might fall into this trap too, Jody, if you've got this determination to do it on your own because you can't trust others. What happens is that you then fall into the trap of doing things that you're not necessarily that strong at the cost of not being able to focus on what your true gift is. And so, what's come to me is the realization that I have to delegate a whole bunch of stuff. For me, it's all about how can I be my most effective now, instead of, oh, how can I fill up the hours in this day, which was how I used to approach it.
I had to change, I think it was January last year. I'm like, okay, how's this year going to be different? Mm-hmm. I have to switch the typical entrepreneurial belief that nobody can do it as good as me with the belief that I hire team members who are better than me at all of these different components of the business. Yes. And it was such a shift, because suddenly allowing little bit by little bit, it wasn't overnight, people come on board. I now have someone who actually runs the team for me because I realized I was shit.
Yeah.
Don't leave me with the contractors. A, they won't perform because I'll be too demanding and I don't sandwich things well. I had to employ someone who was great at managing team because, I realized I wasn't that. And there's something freeing, though, about knowing that 85% of the shit that's got to be done, you're not that good at yourself because wait, every moment that I spend on that, I can be over here doing the stuff I absolutely love that makes me want to jump out of bed in the morning.
It's so true. And it's funny. It's a kind of a reckoning with yourself and understanding. And it's very, you see, I think we've been so indoctrinated, or I was at least, that you not only you're not supposed to love what you do, but there's something a bit naive about that. You know, it's even it's not very, it's a little bit immoral. You know, you're supposed to suffer to succeed. So the very thought that I should only do what I love is almost like, whoa, this is a whole new world.
How does that work?
Yeah, that's right. But it makes so much more sense because, you know, if you're going to succeed at anything, or put it this way, if you're going to fail, chances are you're going to fail at something that you hate because you're no good at it.
And then if you have any, I knew I was stupid. I knew I would get
that's
failure.
Right. There you go. And you reinforce that.
Reinforce
the little white ants.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, if you're going to have any chance of success, it's going to be where your energy naturally flows, and I think then you're talking about tapping into not just physical energy but spiritual energy. And what I've noticed in myself is that spiritual energy is endless. There's no limit to it. So if you can tap into that thing that you really do love, so it's a heartfelt occupation, you know, it's not coming from your mind, it's not coming from what should I be doing with my life, but what
I want to do. Sometimes our minds can trick us, because I know, because I recently went all in on Lady Bulls, as in last month went all in on Lady Bulls, and I closed down the digital agency side because I have not been in love with that for a long time. I mean, at my retreat, you remember me standing up there with post-it notes on the walls, we're all talking about funnels and things like that, and I was saying I only do this for a small window at the retreat because it would literally suck my energy and I'd lose my voice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fully my passion. Now, obviously, a third of Lady Bulls, because there's three different components that we work on, one of those is helping people make money. Absolutely. But first of all, I will only do the parts I love about that. And I will bring on experts who live and breathe funnels and all of the stuff. It doesn't matter how many years of experience I've got in it. I'm going to bring on someone who's better than me and loves it, and they will be a coach within Lady Bulls. So all of that stuff's still available, but I'm not even doing it. So it'll be so, it's such a driving on the other side of the road, something that you've done for so long, not doing that in your business. So doing the parts that you love, it's, you've got to retrain your brain. It's like you're driving on the wrong side of the road. It's like brushing your teeth with your left hand. You're like, okay, how does this work again until it becomes normal?
Yeah. And that's when you get that feeling that you described of actually waking up in the morning wanting to get out of bed, you know. And it's funny, if I spent most of my life not experiencing that. So I just kind of would hear that as a cliche. It didn't really mean anything. The words didn't mean anything. And now it's very meaningful, you know. And now I'm very intolerant of going anywhere near an Excel spreadsheet or anything that I know I'm not good at. I just don't do it. I've started to develop a real resistance to it now.
I remember at the retreat, one of the realizations that of yours that stands out for me is you were talking about what you wanted to do in your business, the one that you're running, you know, now with your workshops and things like that. And you had all these ideas and you're inspired to do it. And you were questioning whether you had the skills and experience to do it. Yet at the retreat, you had told us all of the courses you'd done, the programs you'd done, the adversities you'd gone through, all the experiences, the times you'd helped other people. And you were questioning whether you were qualified to do it when you realized your entire life you'd pretty much been doing it anyway. You just weren't doing it as a business.
Yeah, I think there's a whole shift that we're seeing actually, away from having to have letters after your name, away from, you know, a tertiary degree will guarantee me work. That's just not true anymore. And a shift to real life experience. And we're seeing it now you know, the emphasis on story and people getting to the bottom of what did go on in their past. What was their history? Actually, I heard an interesting line today. Someone said, if you're hysterical, it's historical. And it's true. And you do have to dive back into your past. And in the making sense of your own life and crafting a story, I think that's how you can best help others through example, because there's something about stories that are quite addictive, aren't they, and appealing. You know, they're stories are right brain stuff. We remember stories, whereas we try and remember a mathematical formula. How hard is that? So, yeah, I think that imposter syndrome of, oh, yeah, but you don't have a degree in psychology, you know, who are you to be teaching this? It's quickly dispensed with.
It's also something that people have to keep coming back to. I did a post about this the other day. I sent an email out, and it was that fraud mentality doesn't go away, but as we up-level and break through a new glass ceiling, which never ends, we're always doing that, that fraud mentality comes back, and then we've got to remember that, you know, that's just the little voices. And I remember somebody at a speaker's dinner saying to me many years ago, who coached billionaires, that even the billionaires who run companies with 10,000 employees, they wake up some mornings and can't get out of bed, and they feel like 16-year-old little children. And they're just like, how did I get here? What is going on? And, you know, they're just breaking through another glass ceiling. But the more you grow, the easier you bounce back, the more resilient you get, the more you know your patterns, the more you know how to get back on that train to keep moving forward in a way that feels like joy.
Exactly, yeah. And I think you can, you know, becoming self-aware, you just become more and more self-aware and you start to recognize these things. I'm very lucky because I'm actually quite old. I'm 58. And so for me, I go, bugger this, I don't have time for negative thinking, honestly. I'm not going to waste another year. I certainly don't look at the years that have gone past as wasted by any means. It's my asset base, if you like. I've just, with the notion of external real estate, and I'm now embracing internal real estate, and that's where I know my true value lies, in those experiences. So I'm very grateful for all of them, but equally, my evolution has taken a long time, and I'm not exactly waking up on my deathbed, but I've probably only got 20 or 30 really good years to do what I love doing. And so I'm very, very dismissive with these negative beliefs now. In fact, I usually don't give them the time of day. I just go, no, you're not helping me. If you're not serving me, you don't belong in this room.
I think another powerful exercise, because like we've talked about here, is you know, we've got the negative beliefs. Do you give them energy, which will bring them to the surface, or do we have to dive deep into the past? There's been certain traumatic experiences in my past, and one of the most helpful things that someone had me do was relive those experiences in depth as if it happened to me now, which sounds horrible and traumatic, and it was a very uncomfortable situation, but it made me go and really look at how, I mean, we all know that, you know, if it wasn't for our past, we wouldn't be who we are today, sure, and all those cliches and rah, rah, rah that are actually true. But it made me go back through that scenario and go, there's no way I would feel in danger in that situation. I would know exactly what to do. I never would have put myself in that situation. I could look after myself now. I just am, and actually saying the words that I wish I had said as a child in those moments, as an adult, it makes you go, that moment that trauma happened was so long ago, I'm not even a single cell of the person that I was then. So there is zero, like scientifically, my cells have all replenished. There is not an ounce of me that is even that person anymore. And there is no value in carrying that with me anymore. And it but I had to go deep and play with the devil and roll around in those horrible situations and relive them to undo them.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's essential, Jodie. You do have to walk through the pain, as tempting as it is just to turn your back on it and try and avoid it, because it'll only come back The bite will be bigger if you ignore it later. I must say I'm not a big fan of therapy. I've done therapy and it kind of frustrated me that it was so open-ended. I was like, oh, Janet, what would you like to talk about this week? And I felt that there was no kind of promise to outcome at the end. So yeah, having said that, you do have to go deep. I think my whole obsession is creating processes so that you do it, but you do it in a way that is, you don't linger there longer than you need to. Mm. You need to visit that place, but you also, it's a bit like jumping on the ghost train at Luna Park, right? You know that there's an end to the ride. You have to go there, rather than run away from those feelings. But in the context of, yes, we're visiting this because there's actually a gift in this if you are prepared to go there, because that suffering ultimately is what will compel you to help others. Because when you realize that there is light at the end of the tunnel, for me anyway, I go, well, it's what I'm naturally now inclined to do, to show people that they don't have to suffer anymore. That there is that light, but you've got to be guided through it, and not just thrown into a therapy course or a Tony Robbins workshop or something that where you're trying to artificially inflate your joy. It doesn't work that way. You do have to go to the shadow side, but the shadow side contains the real gift. It's like our inner basement full of trunks, and if you can bring yourself to open them despite all the spiders and cobwebs and things, you'll find a part of yourself that has been unacknowledged, which is actually where the gold lies, and I think is the secret to being able to really be of value to others, even if you're not in a coaching area, in any walk of life.
Even with family, even with your kids.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Well, I could talk to you all day long. I love the way you articulate things as well. The words you choose, and you're very clever at over the years I watch and see that when you come up with your theories, you have this poetic way of putting words to it as well that's unique to everything else I see out there, and I love that.
Oh really, thanks Jody.
So
well, my maiden name was Scrivener, which means writer, and at school they used to call me Scribble Bum. That was my nickname. The naughty boys in grade one. But yeah, I am a bit of a scribbler, a verbal one.
I love it.
Yeah.
So to round it off, because I would love to talk to you all day, but to round off our podcast here, and maybe we'll have to have you back another time to go through the next phases, something you want to, a message that you want to leave everybody with who is in a phase, we are in a pivot phase where they're ready to step up in some area of their life?
Well, I think that my message would be, and it's very, very hard to see this when you're in that dark place, right? Very, very hard. But if you can have faith that there is a rhyme and reason to all of this that's going on, and if you can try and create some distance between yourself and the suffering that you're currently enduring, and realize that it is part of a much bigger journey, and the suffering, I know myself, I suffered terribly during the global financial crisis, and I separate pain from suffering, right? So pain is very, very healthy. We must experience pain, but we've been taught that no, pain is bad and you have to take a pill for it and it'll go away. Pain is fine. It's the suffering where you keep beating yourself up. So the rumination that goes after the pain, why did I do this? Why didn't I sell back then? And all those crazy thoughts that we have.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up, because that's actually not going to help you in the end. Understand that the pain is a part of who we are. It's a part of the human journey, and that there is, there are ways to get through this. And that's my obsession, finding a path for people that's elegant, procedural, diagnostic. There's kind of like a bit of science to it, not just fluffy woo-woo stuff, but you can step your way out of it, and you don't have to wait for a bolt from the blue to go, oh, why am I here? It doesn't work like that. I think you do have the power to emerge from it, and to the point where one day you'll look back on it and you go, oh my God, this sounds ridiculous, but I'm actually grateful that that happened to me.
Yeah. And it feels like it was another person that it happened to. Like it wasn't even.
Yes.
Yeah. You're so disconnected from it. I love it.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for jumping on.
Oh, pleasure.
It's been good to catch up with you. And I always love seeing your workshop photos show up on my Facebook and see you, you know, living that purpose.
Oh, yeah. No, and thanks to you, Jody, because you were very, very instrumental in just, you flicked on a switch for me, which said, actually, this is bullshit, you know, what you've been telling yourself. You don't need to get any degrees or anything. Just go for it. And I think that whole message underpinning Lady Balls, which is, you know, not only are you not serving yourself, if you stay small, you're not serving all those other people that you can potentially help. You know, that's a really important message. So I'll be eternally grateful to you for helping me just get over that little crest.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Okay. Well, if anybody is tuning in, whether that is on iTunes or Anchor FM on my website, go along and subscribe. We're going to have a lot more people on here sharing their story of embracing their lady balls. So thanks a lot, Janet.
Thank you. And and I hope everyone who's listening to this, make sure you really work with Jody and make sure that you you believe in yourself, because if anyone can help you grow some balls, she can.
Perfect ending. Thank you.